Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a profitable servant when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property? That public interest licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? Now, what can we do to protect our lives, our liberties, and our properties from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA or the EPA, or the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, these swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out our substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do. And the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, now that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about this thing of work, unemployment, how to be a profitable servant. Today, the atmosphere between labor and management is so poisoned that labor and management are divided. It would be like a mutinous crew on a ship, and they're at odds with the captain, and they don't want to follow orders. They don't want to follow instructions. And the captain wants to sail west, and they want to sail east. And the captain says, let's put on more sail, and they want to take sail off. So, obviously, if you were trying to run a ship and the crew would not follow the captain's instruction, it probably couldn't get from here to there, and it probably wouldn't be a very successful voyage. And that's why the world's economy now is in meltdown, because labor and management are not working together. They're working at odds with one another, and have been for 75 years. And government has been stoking the fires of this discontent. And they're not doing it for no good reason. There's a purpose behind it. The purpose is this. There's more workers than there are management or managers and entrepreneurs. And so, predictably, we have split down political lines. And so you find that management and business is on one side. We call those in this country Republicans, versus labor on the other side, and we call those the Democrats. And so the Democrats are out here, and they're constantly pushing these bills and programs through Congress to pacify, to placate, to play up to labor. And of course, then they want to lay the bill or the burden on business. And so the businessman, he rejects that, and so he gets his political party, the Republicans, over here and says, "No, what we got to do is we got to stop these things like Social Security and unemployment insurance and workman's compensation and welfare and food stamps and all these benefits." And so we've split politically, and we've got an attitude problem here in America. And the attitude problem is that management is working against me, that the boss is my enemy, and I'm not going to work, and I'm not going to produce, and I'm going to come to work all right and punch the time clock, but I'm going to move real slow, and I'm not going to do everything he tells me to do, and furthermore, I'm going to file complaints constantly against him. Then the government comes in, more often than not on the side of the worker, and prevents the boss from firing him, disciplining him, or taking control of the ship. Well, in this kind of an atmosphere, production goes down. I mean, after all, the labor over here is pinching the girls on the butt over here at the water cooler rather than going back to his workstation over here and producing widgets or whatever it is he's supposed to produce to promote the voyage, to promote the profitability of the company. Now, the reason that I don't like to hire people by the hour is that when you hire a guy by the hour, he puts in what he thinks is a day's work. When you hire the same guy piece rate and you send him out on a job, he will work, at least twice as fast. And sometimes three or four times faster. Let me tell you a little story here. I had a guy named Charlie. Well, Charlie comes over, and he's looking for a job. He's out of money. And so I said, "Well, I'll tell you, Charlie, I've got a fence down here. It's a quarter of a mile, and it's all broken down, and it's covered up by brush and trash. And I'd like somebody to go down there and clear that fence." And he said, "Well, how long do you think it's going to take to do that?" And I said, "Well, if I went down to do that, I'd guesstimate about 10 days. Quarter of a mile. I want a trail on one side of the fence, 10 feet wide, with the brush drug back off of the trail and off of the fence, and it's a quarter of a mile long." And Charlie said, "Well, how much you paying?" And I said, "Charlie, I don't want any employees, and I don't want to hire you." Now at that time, wages here were probably about $5 an hour. And so Charlie thought about it for a little bit, and he said, "Well," "let me go down and look at it." So we went down there, and we walked the fence line, and he took a look at the job, and he said, "Well, I'll do this job for $300. So I got to thinking about, $300. And I said, if a guy worked 10 hours a day at $5 an hour, he'd make $50 a day. And if it took him 10 days to do this job down here, that'd be $500. So in my mind, I figured that the job was worth about $500. Charlie now takes a look at the job, and he says, "Well, I'll do the job, but I want $300 for it." Now that's the basis of making a business deal, because that's $200 less than what I'm willing to pay somebody, just figuring if he came in here and worked by the hour, how long it would take to do that job. And so I'm going to save $200 by hiring Charlie rather than hiring you and paying you $5 an hour and taking 10 days to do that. It'd cost me $500 to hire you to do it, Bob, but I'm going to hire Charlie over here because he's going to do it for three. So Charlie's going to furnish his own chainsaws. I was prepared, if I hired a guy by the hour, I'd have to furnish the saws and gasoline for the saws and And the reason I don't like to do that is that when somebody comes in here and uses my chainsaw, they don't care if they cut rocks with it and run it in the dirt. It's not their chainsaw. They don't care whether the gas-oil mixture is correct or incorrect, burn up the engine. It ain't their saw. But I've noticed that when a man comes in with his chainsaw, he doesn't run it in the dirt. And when he comes in with his chainsaw, he's real concerned about the gas oil mixture, and he don't want to burn up the engine in his saw. That's another reason why I kind of liked old Charlie's thing. Little Charlie comes in one day with his pickup. I didn't pay much attention to him because, see, when you hire a contractor like this, I don't care whether the guy comes to work at 8 o'clock in the morning or at noon. Now, you know, if this guy was working by the hour, I'd be concerned about, well, did he arrive at 8 o'clock or did he get here 15 minutes late? You know, people that work by the hour tend to come in late and leave early. But when you hire a man by the job, you know, we really don't care what time he shows up and we don't care what time he leaves. So old Charlie would come in and he'd leave, and then he'd come back, you know, from lunch, and he'd go down in the woods and he'd come back. And this went on for 3 days. And then one day Charlie comes up to the door and he said, well, I'm through. I'd like to get paid. Now, he'd only worked for 3 days. And I thought, well, now, you know, here's one of these hillbillies. He comes in here, he works for 3 days, now he's tired, and he's got half the job done. Like it's not 10% of the job, and now he wants me to pay him, see? So I said, well, let's get in the pickup and run down and take a look at this. So we got in the pickup, and we went down the ridge and stopped, and where we stopped, the thing was cleared away from the fence, and it was back 10 feet, and that's what I'd asked for. Now, did he do this for 100, 200, 300, 400 feet and then quit, or was it that he did the whole quarter of a mile? So we started walking the fence, and we walked and walked and walked, and the thing was cleared back 10 feet, and all the brush was off the fence, and it was all piled back here at a windrow behind the 10-foot mark, and I walked the whole quarter of a mile, and the whole job was done. Old Charlie had cleared 10 feet of fence, cleared a trail 10 feet wide from the fence back, a quarter of a mile long, did it in 3 days. Now, I owe him $300. How many hours did Charlie work on this job? To be honest with you, I don't know how many hours he worked on the job. I'm going to assume that he worked 10 hours a day. But I don't think he worked 10 hours a day. Now, Charlie is a logger. Charlie is a woodcutter. He's not an amateur by any stretch of the imagination. And Charlie is a little fella. He's not, I don't think he weighs much over, I don't think he weighs 150 pounds. And he's quick. You know what I mean? He's one of these kind of guys that when he moves, I mean, he moves. He's not like me, you know, that kind of ponders around, you know, like a brontosaurus. When little Charlie moves, he moves like a bird. I mean, this guy is fast, you know. And so, I'm going to assume he worked 30 hours. Well, he's getting paid $10 an hour, isn't he? I mean, if he worked 10 hours a day for 3 days and did the job, he's not getting $5 an hour, he's getting $10 an hour. And he did the job in 3 days, so he's getting $100 a day, not $50. Now, what do I care if Charlie makes $100 a day? If a guy came to me and said, I'll do that job, but I want you to pay me $100 a day, I wouldn't hire him. Because I don't think that guy could do $100 worth of work in a day. Now, the reason I point this out to you is because people move just as fast as they believe the job warrants. But when they're working by the job, they move just as fast as is expedient for them to make money. So when the guy's working piece rate, he moves. And when he's working by the hour, he doesn't. He's really slow. About as slow as molasses in January. Now, as a result of that, that's why I like to work by the job, by piece rate. It gives the worker more incentive to get out there and work and produce. Because I don't care whether the guy takes 10 days to do the job or 3 days to do the job. It's irrelevant to me. Now, many jobs are not piece rate type work, and they lend themselves more to a man who's on the job every day, day after day. Like milking cows, for instance, you have to have a man there who is willing to milk the cows in the morning and milk the cows at night, and it's 7 days a week. It takes a special breed of person to work those kinds of jobs. And so the government came in one day and said, no, we want to work an eight-hour day, and we want to pay this man by the hour. But it doesn't lend itself to milking cows and doing farm work, because the cows have to be milked every 12 hours. And so you can't work 8 hours a day. It doesn't lend itself to the needs, the biological needs of the cow. That's an industrial ideology. It doesn't have anything to do with biology. But, you know, the government comes in and says, this is what you got to do. And so now on dairies, we have to pay these guys by the hour. So we have to industrialize our agriculture. And that's what we've done. We've industrialized our agriculture, not because it's good biology, but because it's good industry. And then, of course, there's a cost that comes in there. And now we have to pay that cost. There's an inefficiency that comes in there, and we have to pay for that inefficiency. Now, back in 1930, this politics of envy really got started hot and heavy about 1930 when Herbert Hoover was president. And the Democrats on the other side, wanting to get political power, they said, look at this depression now. This is a Republican depression. This is the fault of the Republicans. You should vote for us. And as the thing got worse and worse, by 1932, they pointed out that Henry Ford in 1930 made $30 million. And you're selling apples on the street corners for a nickel, and Henry Ford made $30 million, which is totally irrelevant. How much money Henry Ford makes is irrelevant. But it's the politics of envy. Because you've got 25 million people who can all vote who are unemployed. And we want them to vote for Franklin Roosevelt. And so we point those people at this industrialist over here who's laying people off and not building cars, making $30 million a year. And does he care about his employees? No, no, 1,000 times no. Vote Democratic. And so this plays itself well to the concepts of envy. It fits right in with vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, the five motivators of human nature. All right, but it creates something different than this captain and crew. Now, if a ship is running correctly, the captain is what we call the master. It's a master-servant relationship. Ships run perfectly. Ships don't run by committee. There's an autocrat that directs the operation of the ship, and his word is law. And in fact, if you want to test this, you know, as a matter of law, if you get uppity with the captain, he can throw you in the brig. He can lock you up. He doesn't need a trial. He doesn't need due process. He doesn't need a search warrant. You know, all the things that we like to think of, you know, in civil society as being constitutional rights. He doesn't need any of that. It's his ship. And then you live and die on board the ship at his discretion and his pleasure. And then you're hired to do a job. And as a sailor on the ship, when the captain says, okay, I want you to go down to the boiler room and shovel coal, you just say, aye, aye, captain, and go down to the boiler room and shovel coal. And if the captain says, now I want you to mop the deck, swab the deck, then you just say, aye, aye, captain, and go do that. Now, it used to be that way on land. It used to be that way in a master-servant relationship, and we called people that worked, we didn't call them employees, we called them bond servants. You were bonded to your master. And then we called this feudalism. So somebody woke up one day and they said, well, we don't like this feudalism. We did this during the French Revolution. We said, you know, what we need is freedom. We want to be free. Well, I suppose, you know, if you're sailing on a ship, the members of the crew could say, you know, we don't like this captain, and we want to be free. And so let's mutiny against the captain, take over the ship, and run it by committee. We'll just run the ship the way we want to run it. And that's what we've done here in America in our industries. We have taken over political control of these corporations. And then by extension, we've extended this political control over the little mom and pop stores. We do this through Social Security and federal tax identification numbers, income tax. And then we have labor and labor laws. And then Congress gets into the act over here, and we're constantly fine-tuning, and we create agencies like OSHA and the EPA and the Department of Labor. And the government manages our businesses. Now, in the final analysis, it's government that's directing and operating these businesses by committee, by political control. So the efficiencies that we would expect are no longer there. And so we can no longer compete, and other people out there in the world can produce much more for much less, compete more effectively. And we've exported all of our jobs over to China. Not exactly clear why we thought that was a good idea, but we did. It was a political move. And we've been following our politicians, and the politicians said this is good for us, and so we've done it. All right, now we're on the cusp now of this Great Depression number 2, an extension of the 1930s program. And so I said, well, what do you do in this circumstance here in order to keep from being the guy that gets cut, the guy that's kept on? And so I've told you a couple, three stories here. Now let me tell you one more little story here about peace rate. About working for your master. Instead of working against the owner of the company, your boss, your employer, have you ever thought about working for him? This is a wild new concept. That instead of an atmosphere of animosity, what if you had an atmosphere of master-servant relationship and you just said, yes, sir, I will do what you tell me to do. Now, the Bible has a little something to say about this. There's a story over here in Matthew chapter 21 and verse 28. It's called the parable of the two sons. There's a man who has two boys. And then he said, but what do you think? A certain man had two sons, and he came to the first, and he said, son, go work today in my vineyard. And the boy answered and said, I will not. But afterward, the boy got to thinking about it, and he repented, and he went to work in the vineyard. He went out and he went to work. Now he came to his second son, and he said, likewise. He said, son, go down to my vineyard and work. And the son said, yes, sir, I go, sir. But he didn't go. He went down to Battlefield Mall to play video games. And so the question arises, whether of them twain did the will of his father? And the scribe said to him, well, the first. And Jesus said to them, well, truly I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots will go into the kingdom of God before you. Because John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and you believed him not, but the publicans and the harlots believed him. And you, when you had seen it, repented not afterward that you might believe him. Now, you know, you say, well, that sounds real good, and that's just real religious. But, you know, there's a moral to the story here. Now, the moral to the story is a master-servant relationship in which the boy number one said, "I ain't going to do it." But he goes out and he goes to work and he does his job. The other one says, "Well, yeah, I'm going to do it," but he doesn't. So we hire on, and then we say, "Well, we're going to work." You know, we hire on, but then when we get the job, then we don't work. We don't produce. Now, we'd be better off, you know, if you had a guy that said, "Well, I won't work for you," and then he repents and comes in and says, "Okay," and then he goes to work and he actually produces something. Now, I've mentioned to you that the owner of the company, the boss, the employer, the captain of the ship, his interest is in profitability. His interest is useful, productive, meaningful work. When you come to work today, what did you accomplish when you went home? Can you look back and say, "Well, here's what needed to be done today, and here's what I got done," past tense. No, most guys, they come to work and they put in their time, but what actually got done? Are you somebody that needs constant supervision? This is a problem that we have in management. You have a guy and you tell him to do a job and you got to go supervise him to do it. You got to take him out there like a little kid and show him what you want done. And then he goes out and he does that. And maybe he's a good worker and he actually accomplishes what you set out to do. And then when he finishes the task, he stands there. He doesn't go on to any other task. He doesn't come back to you and say, "Okay, what's next?" He goes and hides himself someplace, like the guy with the one talent. He goes and hides it so that he doesn't have to work, doesn't have to do any more. I'm not going to do any more than I absolutely have to. I have to arrive at 8 o'clock, and here I am, and I have to punch in, and I punched in. But unless you tell me what to do and show me where to go and tell me how to do it, I ain't going to do it. I'm going to put in my time, collect my check. But can you see what needs to be done and go do it without being told? Most employees cannot do that. And the atmosphere is so poisoned that he will not do that. He can see what needs to be done out here. He can see a broken board on the side of the barn wall. Will he, of his own volition, look at that board broken and the hole in the barn wall and go get a hammer and a handful of nails and come over and nail that board back on? Not unless he's told to. You know, I've been around places, and you can come here to my farm, and you can look around here, and you can see all kinds of things that need to be done. I mean, you know, you see a hole in the barn wall. Well, obviously, that hole in the barn wall, you know, when the barn was built, it didn't have that hole there. So, obviously, that hole needs to be patched, needs to be fixed. All right, let's take a look at another one. Do you volunteer to do extra work? When you see something that needs to be done, do you just go out and do it because it needs to be done without anybody telling you? Well, not if you're a normal employee with this poisoned atmosphere. You're not working for the boss. You're working for yourself. You're working for a paycheck that comes every Friday. You're not here to do useful, productive, meaningful work. Do you stand around idle? When you finish your job, do you stand there and wait until somebody comes to you and tells you, here's what we're going to do next? Are you working for or are you working against your company, against your boss? You know, the average guy, he comes in here, his attitude is, I'm here because I have to be here. I don't want to be here. If I had my druthers, I'd be fishing. He's not working for the company. He's working because he has to work, and he doesn't want to be here. He doesn't like this job. Probably doesn't like the boss. Now, is your master, is your boss, is he your friend or is he your enemy? How do you view this guy? I mean, if you don't like this guy, I told you about Larry Brown, and I said, I will work free in order to learn how to do this job. it was of advantage to me if I could go to work on a logging show and spend a month there and learn how to do this logging job. Then I would be experienced and I could go work someplace else, couldn't I? I'd know what to do and how to do it. And so I said, well, I'm willing to spend a month of my time to learn how to do this. Now, people don't mind going to community college to be retrained for a new job, and they don't mind paying a fee. But if you said to somebody, would you go out and bond yourself to an employer and work free for this guy to learn how to do the job, I think you people would choke before you would do that. You would pay a college money out of your pocket. You would pay a bank interest on the loan that it takes you to go to college to learn how to do this job, but you wouldn't go to work for the owner of the company and get trained for that job and work free. Now, would you? So is your master your friend or is he your enemy? Would you take a 25% pay cut in order to keep your job? Because that was what was proposed by General Motors to the labor unions. They said, hey, we might need you to take some cuts over here. And they said, like hell. During the Great Depression, Frank Rocha, when he came over here in 1922, went to work standard in the industry. Milking cows was $40 a month in board and room. In 1933, old man Nielsen came to Frank Rocha and said, we're going to cut you back to $30 a month. We want you to take a $10 a month pay cut. And Frank Rocha said, yes, sir, I'll take a 25% pay cut. And then in 1940, when World War II broke out, they raised their rates back up to $40 a month. At the end of the Depression, when business got back cooking again, the war was on, why they went back to $40 a month in board and room. Now, the politics of envy that I mentioned about Henry Ford were, Henry Ford's making $30 million a year. Well, old man Nielsen owned the farm, owned the cows, owned the land, and came to the laborer and said, I want you to take a 25% pay cut. And Frank didn't argue with him. He said, yes, sir, I need the job. I'll take a 25% pay cut. Frank was working for old man Nielsen in the same way that I was working for Frank Rocha. Frank Rocha was never my enemy. He was my friend. Was he always rich? Yes, he was rich beyond my wildest imaginations. I never thought that I'd have as much money as Frank Rocha. And I worked hard for him, and I worked for him without complaint. And I was his bondservant. And I worked many times all night clipping fields. And I was a loyal member of the crew. And he paid me, and he paid me well. He paid me the standard wages of the day. He never cheated me. He always paid me more than he agreed to. But he insisted that I work. And then I did work. And I performed and I produced for him. I was never unemployed. As old as I am, I think I could go back to Humboldt County today and get a job milking cows. I honest to God, I think as old as I am, I could still go back there. I haven't been there for 40 years, but then probably all the old-timers are dead and buried, and probably nobody there today would know who I am or where I came from. But I always had a good reputation in the valley. I was a good worker for Frank. I was a good worker for Bill, a good worker for Francis. And every time I worked for a man, I worked for that guy, and I was loyal to him, and I performed for him. And at the end of the day, I could look back and say, here's what I got done today that needed to be done, and I did more than needed to be done. I was a profitable servant. And I was never unemployed. Never. I have never spent a day unemployed unless I wanted to be. And I got to give you a reminder here, children, that we are the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about unemployment here. And millions of people are unemployed, and millions more are going to be unemployed. I'm not going to be one of those. I never have been, haven't been in the past, and I'm not now, and I don't intend to be in the future. But there are certain rules, certain laws, certain practices and procedures that we go through in life. And if you practice that, then you get a result. There's a result that comes from it. Now, when I was a kid, a man's word was his bond. That comes from Numbers chapter 30. And in Numbers chapter 30, God comes down with a law. He says, "What proceeds out of your mouth cannot return again." When you tell somebody that you're going to do something, then you have to do that. That's the bottom line. Now, oftentimes, people hear what they want to hear. And when I say that, oftentimes, people have a desire, and they will make a request. And this has happened many times, and it'll probably happen many times again. Somebody will come up to me and they'll say, "Well, here's what I'd like." And I say, "Okay, I hear you." And then they take that and they say, "Well, he's agreed, and he's going to give me that." Now, I haven't agreed, and I'm not going to give you that. I just said, "I hear you. I hear your request." Now, we used to have a guy on Lighthouse Road, and he was a German fellow. His name was Slate, Herman Slate. And it didn't take me very long, and I asked about the various neighbors up and down the road there, and asked about Old Man Silva and Old Man Nunes and Walter Bagnuda and Herman Slate. And Frank said, "We don't do business with Herman Slate." And I didn't know why, and so I said, "Well, why?" And he said, "Because his word isn't any good." And I thought, well, that's kind of unusual. I 15-year-old kid, didn't know quite what that meant. And I said, "Well, what's that all about?" And he said, "Well, Herman Slate, he's a drunk. He drinks, and his word isn't any good. He's like a drug addict. If you've ever had any dealings with a drug addict, you know that these people are unstable. That their word isn't any good. They're liars." And he said, "Because of that, there isn't anybody on the road here that will do business with him or that will work with him or have anything to do with him. Now, as time progressed along, I noticed that with the neighbors, when Frank Rocha said, "I will be over to your place at 10 o'clock with two tractors and two wagons to help you haul hay," you could take that to the bank. I mean, we were going to be there Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock with two tractors and two wagons. And there wouldn't be any excuses, and the hired help would be there, and by God, we're there to haul hay. Now, with Herman Slate, he would take your help, but then when it came time for him to come over and help you, he wouldn't show up. And so, you know, that just happens once, maybe twice, if we're not too smart. And pretty soon, you know, everybody says, okay, well, Herman Slate's word isn't any good. And so when everybody else is putting in hay, you know, the neighbors are helping each other, and everybody's putting in hay, and nobody's helping Herman Slate. He had two daughters. Well, Herman was down there with his two girls, and they were out there hauling their own hay and doing the best they could, and that was the end of it. Nobody gave him a hand. Nobody'd ask him for help, and nobody'd help him. Now, that's what happens when your word isn't any good, or when you don't work and you don't want to get your hands dirty, and you don't want to pull your share. You know, you want to be a gold bricker. We call those gold brickers. And so, as a result of that, you end up being unemployed. You end up being shunned, as the Amish would put it. So, now, one time I was working for a guy named Tony Nunes. And Tony had a field of hay down there, about 4,000 bales. And I said to him, "I'd like to haul that hay for you for a nickel a bale." Now, we'd been paying $2 an hour to haul hay. And that was the going rate, $2 an hour. And you'd hire a bunch of day laborers to come out there and help you. And it was a big production, 20 acres of hay, 4,000 bales. You know, take you about a week to put that hay in. And so, when I was over at the Rocha place, I learned how to load wagons with a pitchfork. Learned how to load baled hay with a pitchfork. One day, old Frank was out there with one guy on a wagon, and he was working by himself loading hay on the wagon with a pitchfork. The rest of us guys, all of us young bucks, you know, we're out there with our hay hooks, and we're picking it. We all had gloves on. You know how tender feet are, you know, with gloves on their hands. And so I noticed that Mr. Rocha, an old man 50 years old, could load a wagon in about 20 minutes. That's 140 bales on a 16-foot wagon, 8 feet wide, seven bales high, 140 bales put on there. And the rest of us are over here. It would take two of us, one on each side, about a half an hour to load a wagon. And we couldn't put on 140 bales because we couldn't get that hay up seven high. We could only go five high. And so we would have about 100 bales on our wagon, five high, 20 bales to a wagon, 20 bales to a row, tier. And so we get 100 bales on in a half an hour, and there'd be twice as many people working. And I watched that. And I was amazed. I mean, I was out there working with sweat dripping off the end of my nose. And I mean, I was just really hustling. I was running. I was just working and sweating up a storm and just trying to load bales and keep up with Mr. Roach. And I just couldn't do it. He's an old man, 50 years old. So we're sitting there eating lunch. Old Maybrook. In those days, you know, they used to put on big productions. So old maid come down to pick up, and she'd have food. Hell, there'd be 20 people working out there. And she'd have food for 20 people, and we'd take an hour, and we'd eat lunch. See? And while we were eating lunch, I'd finish eating, and I said, "Mr. Rocha, now I noticed that you're loading that wagon over there with a pitchfork, and I noticed that you got seven bales high. And I notice that your wagon has 140 bales, and I'm watching you, and you're loading that by yourself over there faster than two of us can load a wagon over here." And then I said, "Why do you use that pitchfork?" It just didn't make any sense. And when I asked him, I said, now, why do you use that pitchfork? And he said, because I'm too old to work. Well, listen up, boys and girls. Pay attention here. This old man said to me, 15-year-old punk kid, he said, I'm too old to work. And I said, I don't understand that. And he said, well, have you ever heard of a lever? And I said, yes, sir. He said, that's a simple machine. I'm using a simple machine called a lever to load hay. And that's because I'm old, full of years, and I'm too lazy to work. So I want a machine. I want a tool. And I didn't understand that. So I said, well, could I work with you over there? Would you show me how to do that? I'd like to learn how to I would like to learn how to load hay with a pitchfork. Now, the rest of you see, you're all sitting out there saying, that's insane. I know it. Sounds crazy. But you know, you got simple machines. They're called inclined planes, levers, and pulleys. You know, when you went to ag shop, did they ever explain that to you? So, after lunch, I went over to Mr. Roach's wagon, and I went to work for him, and he picked up the pitchfork, and he said, okay, now, let me show you how this works. And he stuck the pitchfork into the bale behind one rope, and then he bent it over his knee and stuck it down into the ground and stood the bale straight up on end. Then he picked it straight up and dropped it on the wagon. And so I tried that, and sure enough, it wasn't too difficult. It was a matter of learning how to use this simple machine, that is, the handle of the pitchfork across my knee, which was the fulcrum, to move the load, which was the bale of hay, which was in the tines. Now, some of you engineers out there may sit there and say, huh, what a novel idea, using a pitchfork as a lever to move a load. Now, we're going to do this 140 times, and there's a row of bales, and we're just going to walk alongside the wagon, stick this pitchfork in, bend it across our knee, and throw it on the wagon, and just keep doing that. And is that easier, faster? Does it take less physical energy input than it does to take two hooks, one in each hand, and pick that thing up using the small of your back as the fulcrum? I mean, that's all your body is a lever if you're going to use use hay hooks. All right, so now watch how this works. And by the end of the day, I was able to load 140 bales on a wagon by myself. And then I could do it in 20 minutes, which is what he was doing. And all the rest of the guys out here working in the field for $2 an hour, the best that they could do is 100 bales to a wagon in 30 minutes. And two of them to do that. All right? Now, that's what we call useful, productive, meaningful work. What our objective is here is to move all of these bales out of the field, to take them up the road a quarter of a mile and put them in that barn and stack them up. We're going to play with blocks. You know, when you're a little kid, you're 5 years old and you got blocks. Do you remember that? You're 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. You're stacking blocks. Do you remember that? That's, you know, when you get to be a big boy, you get to be a man, you get to stack blocks. We call them bales of hay. And that's why we go through those exercises when we're little kids, stacking blocks so that we can put hay in the barn, load hay on wagons. And so I learned how to do that, and I got to thinking about that one day, and I said, wow, this is pretty valuable. I want to put this to work. So I'm down here talking to Tony Nunes one day, some years later, and I said, he had a 20-acre field, and he had about 4,000 bales down there. And I said, Tony, I'd like to contract with you. I would like to move all of that hay into the barn. Now, normally it would cost about $500 to move all that hay into the barn. And by the time you hire these crews and feed them, and you take about a week, and you get tractors and wagons and all that, it's about what it takes. And so I asked him, and he said, a nickel a bale. So he took a nickel a bale times 4,000 bales. See, those balers have counters on them. So when you get through baling this field, the guy that bails it comes up and says, well, I got 3,987 bales, and you pay him so much a bale to bail that up, see? And so here's 4,000 bales. Now, if you take 4,000 times 0.05, a nickel a bale, that's $200. And this is back in the 1950s, so $200 back then was quite a bit of money. You know, again, you know, if you're making $250 or $300 a month in board and room, you know, you're making about, at $300 a month, you're making $10 a day cash, $10 a day. Now, when you get through with your barn work, I mean, you get through with milking cows in the morning, get through with the barn work, then you have the day until 4 o'clock in the afternoon when you got to milk again. So from about 9 o'clock in the morning until about 3:30 in the afternoon, that's when we do our day's work. And he said to me, okay, if I would do that for $200, that he'd give me the job. So I called my friend Leo. Now I'm going to use Tony's tractors and wagons, two tractors and four wagons. And I called Leo and I said, hey, Leo, you want to haul hay? And he said, what do you want me to do? So I said, well, come down here and help me. I got 4,000 bales, going to get a nickel a bale. I'll split it with you 50-50. You're going to put 4,000 bales in the barn. And Leo said, well, yeah, I'll come over and do that. And so when he got through milking, he showed up about, you know, 9:30, something like that. And I had two tractors and four wagons, and we went down in the field. So he got up on the on the wagon. He loaded, and I got on the ground with my pitchfork, and I loaded those wagons. It takes about 20 minutes to load two wagons. So we got 20, 40, 60, 80 minutes. In about an hour and a half, we got four wagons load of hay down the field, the two of us. Okay. So that's 140 bales. So let's take 140 times 4. That's 560 bales. Then we got 560 bales loaded on four wagons. We drive up to the barn, and then we go in the barn and we unload them. And we're through by noon. Now, we don't take off for lunch, say. We both have sandwiches, and so I eat my sandwich on the way down into the field. Leo's eating his sandwich driving down the field, and we loaded up a second load, 560 bales, in the afternoon. Now, 560 times 2 is 1,120 bales. How long will it take us to move 4,000 bales if we can move 1,100 bales a day? Well, that's 11, 22, 33. So in about 3.5 days, we have this job done. Between milkings. So now how much money do we make? Well, we make $200 for 3 days' work. Okay. So now I got to tell you that when you get through milking at night in the summertime, you can work at night, and that's what we did. So after milking, we came back at 6 o'clock, and then we went down and we worked until 9. So we got another 3 hours in. And so in about a little less than 3 days, we'd finished the job. Now, here's a couple of guys. We make $10 a day. But all of a sudden, we make $100 in 3 days. That's $30 a day. That's three times as much money. Now, just translate that into your job. You're making three times your normal wages a day. And you're doing it between milkings. Is that pretty heady? Listen, Nunes was just livid. He said to me, he said, do you know how much you're making per hour? What difference does it make to Tony how many dollars an hour I'm making? He saved $300, and that's what I pointed out to him. I said, now, Tony, you know as well as I do, if you hired a crew, you mean you're going to have 10 guys working out here. They're going to be working for a week to move that hay in the barn. And I said, two guys that know what they're doing and know how to do it and get out there and go to work can move 4,000 bales and put it in the barn in 3 days. And then I said, we did it. You saved $300 and we made three times our wages per day. And it said it was a good deal for you and it was a good deal for us. And it demonstrates productivity. It demonstrates the free marketplace. It demonstrates that when you get out there and you go to work. Now, you know, you just take your job. I don't care who you are, where you're at, or what you're doing. You just take your job. You know as well as I do that you could do whatever it is you do in a day in half the time if you really got out there and hustled. You could do it in half the time. Now, if you would do that and do that every day, you would be making your boss twice as much money. That's right. Henry Ford, instead of making $30 million, would make $60 million. But at the same time, you would be doubling your productivity. Don't you think that Mr. Ford would reward you if you'd get out there without being told and actually double your productivity? I'll guarantee you this. If you're the guy that produces twice as much as everybody else, when it comes time for the layoffs and the pink slips, you'll be the last guy to go. There's no doubt in my mind you'll be the last guy to go, unless you're working on a union job and you're a member of the herd. And that's just common sense. You don't have to be real smart now to figure that out now, do you, Tom, Sally? Come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee. And that's the difference between working against your master and working for your master. It's the difference between being smart enough to see what needs to be done and then going out and doing it without having to have direct supervision constantly. You know, here on the farm, people come here and they work off their classes sometimes. And I tell them, I say, now listen, you know, I've got radio programs to do, I've got classes to teach, I've got things I got to do. I cannot be out here supervising you constantly. And I'm amazed when people come here, they have to be supervised. Honest to God, they can't work without supervision. I can give them a list of things to do, write it down, and they'll go out and do them. And then when they get through, they cannot see anything else that needs to be done here. And they stand around for hours. Well, Mr. Gordon, you weren't here, and so I didn't know what to do. And so I went up to my cabin, and I was watching TV, and I was sleeping, and I was doing this and that. And I was like, okay, well, come on out here. Let me give you another list of things to do. And we'll give him a list of things to do. If that guy, you know, if he comes here and he's working off classes, and I want to help, you know, this guy get his schooling under his belt and so on. But honest to God, if this guy came to me and I needed to hire this guy, I wouldn't hire him. I wouldn't waste my time on him. And that's because this guy can't see what needs to be done. He has to be supervised. And he won't volunteer to do any extra work either. He'll do what you tell him to. He'll do what he has to do, but he's not going to do anything that he doesn't have to do. He's not working for me. And it's the attitude that he learned in school. It's the attitude he learned from mom and dad. It's an attitude. It's an anti-labor attitude. It's an anti-master's attitude. It's very normal. It's very natural. I hear you. But it's not going to keep you employed. You're just a member of the herd, and when it's time to hand out the pink slips, you'll just get yours just like everybody else. It doesn't have to be that way, but it requires a change from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model, which calls from each according to his need, to each according to his need, and from each according to his ability, to the 10 Commandment model. A change to the 10 Commandment model. Hey, I'm out of time here. Children, we're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the law school and the Law Hour, why don't you go to our website? It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then go to our website, georgegordon.org, the Law Hour, or the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk in the law. Our website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.